Pretend Not to Know by Subversa. Therefore, send not to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. John Donne. Part 1. Christmas, 1997. Chapter 1. I'll Be Home for Christmas. Hermione Granger thanked Stan Shunpike and Ernie Prang and wished them each a happy Christmas before she stepped off the night bus, with Crookshank's basket in one hand and a rucksack full of clothing and personal items in the other. The week-old snowfall on her parents' lawn crunched under her feet as she made her way onto the walk and up to the front steps. Stomping her feet to remove any remaining snow, she used her key to open the door and slipped into the cold, dark house. Dumping her rucksack at the foot of the stairs, she let Crookshanks out of his carrier and began to go through the room, switching on lights. "It's really cold in here, isn't it, Crooks?" she said, rubbing her hands together. Crookshanks gave her a disdainful glance from his baleful yellow eyes and turned his face pointedly away. "I know you hate traveling on the night bus, but it was either that or leave you at Hogwarts. Would you have preferred that?" He flicked his tail once in answer. "I've never seen you as angry as you were the one time I tried to apparate with you. Even Mrs. Weasley couldn't heal the scratch on my cheek." She reached up and traced a finger across her left cheek, the smooth skin belying the deep, angry mark that had been there at the end of the summer. She had gone to the Burrow, meaning to spend a weekend with the Weasleys before September 1st. Proud of her still new apparition license, she had decided to travel by that method, with her rucksack on her back and Crookshanks in her arms. Crookshanks had violently objected to the sensation of being squeezed through a too small tube. Molly Weasley had fussed over Hermione for several minutes after she had arrived that day, healing the evidence of Crookshanks' displeasure. But Hermione had required a visit with the healers at St. Mungo's to repair the deepest scratch. "It's a good thing you came, dear," the motherly healer had told her, smearing a thick yellow goo over the newly healed skin. "Otherwise you would have had a scar on your face. And what young girl would want to mar such pretty skin, hmm?" Hermione had flushed scarlet at the healer's statement. It had been less from embarrassment over the words than from self-consciousness triggered by the warm look of agreement in Ron's eyes as he had stood with Harry and Jenny at the side of the room. That very weekend, Hermione and Ron had shared their first kiss, which had quickly escalated into a rather awkward and dissatisfying tryst in Jenny's room, with Jenny and Harry locked in a heated embrace on the other twin bed. Hermione shook herself out of her reminiscences and moved to engage the heater. Her parents had left it set quite low when they had departed for Switzerland for their skiing holiday. Neither they nor their daughter had anticipated that she would be coming home for the Christmas hauls. Hermione went to the fireplace in the sitting room and began to lay kindling for a fire. Now that her memories had been stirred, it would be just as well to let them flow and get it over with, she supposed. Having a boyfriend had been a lovely novelty after 6 years of silent hoping. Victor had been her only interlude in that time. Being the choice of a boy so much older, and one who was famous as well, had been a huge lift to Hermione's status amongst the other girls at Hogwarts. His physical dominance and sexual aggression, however, had been quite alarming for her, particularly when she had not felt that level of passion for him. Ron had been different, sweet, tender, loving, as well as bullheaded, insensitive, and coarse. Hermione had very much enjoyed the hand-holding through the corridors, having a date for Hogsmeade weekends, and the desperate kisses exchanged in the common room and at other odd places throughout the castle. What she had not enjoyed was Ron's insistence on frequent intercourse, a feat at which his only excellence was speed of completion. She had read several books about it, and could not persuade Ron to try any of the techniques listed there. She had begun to dread his entreaties, and her reluctance had driven a wedge between them, in spite of her insistence that her lack of interest in sex had not indicated a lack of love for Ron. The last weekend in November had brought about the first Gryffindor Quidditch match, during which they had soundly trounced Hufflepuff. Hermione had come upon Ron in a third-floor alcove, nailing Romilda Vane against the rough stone wall in a post-victory shag, his pale buttocks thrusting in time with Romilda's cries, whilst his trousers hung at his knees. It had been difficult for Ron and Romilda to explain their subsequent injuries to their dormitory mates. Ron had the word cheat traced across his bum cheeks as if drawn there by a sharp-bladed knife, whilst Romilda had the word slut gouged across the thigh which had been gripping Ron's waist as she had panted and mooed like the cow she was. Hermione had been humiliated and infuriated. From that day forward, she had not spoken to Ron at all, in spite of Harry's frequent attempts to broker a peace between them. She and the boys had been set to spend Christmas at Hogwarts, where they would be the safest, but the rift between Ron and Hermione had brought out the git in the youngest Weasley boy. He had induced his mom to invite Harry, but not Hermione, home to the Burrow for Christmas. Molly, having had the story of the breakup poured into her ears by her patently heartbroken son, had readily agreed, hoping that time would heal the friendship between Ron and Hermione, if not the romance. Molly had not, however, relished the notion of having feuding teenage lovers in her small house for the halls, so she had left Hermione out of her invitation, meaning to make it up to the young witch at a later time. After all, Molly had reasoned, Hermione had parents with whom to spend Christmas, but Harry had no one. Ron had staged a loud conversation with Jenny in the common room, informing her of their mother's plans, all for Hermione's ears. Mindful, as always, of her head girl status, Hermione had bit back her scathing opinion of Ronald Weasley and his immature posturing. Instead, she had turned her mind to plans for her own Christmas holiday. With Harry and the Weasleys going to the Burrow for the winter break, Hermione would be the only Gryffindor remaining. She had no desire to kick around the castle on her own for the best part of 3 weeks. Her parents had invited her to Switzerland for their skiing trip when they had planned it back in October. Hermione had declined, wanting to spend the holiday with the boys. It was far too late now to ask to be included in the Swiss trip. Furthermore, if her parents became aware of her dilemma, they would give up the trip for themselves to spend Christmas with her. Hermione could not bear to be the cause of that kind of sacrifice. She had determined that she would wait at school until her parents departed for the ski lodge, then she would go home. It would be an excellent opportunity to really get a head start on revising for newts, and she could indulge in the kind of comfort food eating that was not possible at Hogwarts. She would enjoy spending Christmas alone, she thought defiantly, with angry tears standing in her eyes. Now she lit the fire in the grate with one of the long hearth matches, chuckling to herself at what a creature of habit she could be. Dropping the Muggle match in the grate, she tried her hand at a bit of nonverbal, wandless magic, and was gratified to see the flames leap up from the carefully stacked logs. Now all she needed was a tub of chocolate ice cream and a pot of steaming cocoa, and her evening would be perfect. It was the Friday night before Christmas, the beginning of her holidays, and she could do anything she wanted. The sour-faced man slumping in the chair before the headmaster's desk resembled nothing so much as a student who had been called on the carpet for a scolding. His shoulders were pulled in on his chest, his eyes were firmly fixed on his belt buckle, and a world-class sneer graced his lips. Oily black hair hung like curtains on either side of his sallow face, obscuring his expression from the patient man facing him on the other side of the desk. Albus Dumbledore did not have to see Snape's face to approximate what his potions master's expression would be. He knew that what he had to ask of Snape was uncommonly inconvenient, but it had to be done, and Snape was the only one who was both available and capable. "If there were any other recourse, I would not ask you to do this." "You might have given me some notice, headmaster," the potions master muttered, refusing to meet the older man's eyes. Dumbledore's eyebrows rose. "You had plans for Christmas, Severus? I had no idea." Snape raised black eyes, fathomless as an abyss, to glare at his mentor. "You know very well I do not. Nevertheless, it is common courtesy to allow one's colleagues time for planning when asking a favor." Dumbledore nodded sympathetically. "I apologize for the lack of notice. I'm afraid that Hermione's decision to go home alone for Christmas took us all by surprise. And as you are well aware, both Professor McGonagall and Nymphadora Tonks are conducting undercover surveillance assignments, which it has taken us months to arrange. We do not have a single female order member available to assist in this matter." Snape sniffed. "I do not understand why you did not compel Miss Granger to remain at Hogwarts, or at the very least, insist that she go to be with her friends." Snape infused the last word with such loathing that he might have been speaking a swear word. "Then she would be the Weasley's problem rather than mine." Dumbledore studied him for a few moments. "No, I don't suppose you would understand, Severus. Take my word for it, that it was a kindness to Hermione not to prevent her from going home. But it is not safe for her to remain unprotected while her parents are abroad. I only ask that you remain until her parents return. It is 8 or 9 days, and then you will have fulfilled your obligation." "You expect me to skulk about a muggle neighborhood inconspicuously for over a week?" Snape demanded peevishly. Dumbledore laughed out loud. "Certainly not. It is very cold, even down south. Arabella Fig tells me that there has been snow on the ground in Surrey for days. No, you'll be staying in the house." Snape stood abruptly. "I hope you have informed the girl to expect me." Dumbledore stood also. "I have not. She would only have objected. I mean to present her with a fait accompli." Snape's lip curled in self-derision. "I'm sure she will be delighted," he said, his tone between anger and insolence. Dumbledore extended an envelope inscribed with Hermione's name and bearing the Hogwarts seal. "The letter will explain everything to her, dear boy. I'm sure that you will be comfortable at the Grangers' home. Happy Christmas to you." Snape turned on his heel, his robes billowing dramatically in his wake, and flung out of the room without deigning to respond. In my dream.
Send Not to Know, Chapter 2, Home for the Holidays. Hermione watched the end of the Christmas movie with tears on her eyelashes. She felt silly, but she cried at the same movies every time she saw them. The empty pint tub of chocolate ice cream lay on its side on the coffee table, with a spoon protruding from it. The weight of the spoon had been too much for the cardboard container, and it had toppled over when she set it down. The china teapot, which had been full of homemade cocoa, was empty as well. Stretching, she spoke to Crookshanks. "I think it's about time for us to go to bed, don't you, Crooks? I want to be up early to begin revising." The orange furball with a squashed face lifted his head and blinked at her, having been mollified by a can of real tuna tipped into his bowl. He had since cleaned himself, spreading the essence of tuna fish over his entire body, and was prepared to move his nap from the sitting room sofa to the bed upstairs. Hermione jumped when the doorbell rang. Looking at her wristwatch in something of a panic, she stood up, her heart pounding. Who on earth would be at her door at 10 o'clock at night? Furtively, she crept from the sitting room into the hallway, placing her eye to the peephole. Nothing but blackness. She started again when someone rapped sharply on the door. Her heart now felt as if it were thumping in her throat. Miss Granger! She knew that voice. Oh, surely not. More pounding on the door, now impatiently. It's Professor Snape, Miss Granger. Kindly open the door. For the love of Merlin, what had she done that was so bad that Snape pursued her from Hogwarts? As she stood in the hallway, her wand at the ready, but her mind blank of initiative, she heard a muttered imprecation, followed by the muggle locks on the door, twisting to disengage. At the same time, the wards she had placed came tumbling down as if they'd been cast by a firsty. The door swung open, and Severus Snape swept into the hallway. "Stupid little girl," he snarled, slamming the door shut behind him. "Do you think it's a good idea to have me standing upon your doorstep, entreating entry for all your neighbors to hear?" Hermione gaped at him, her indignation nearly robbing her of the power of speech. She stood in her front hallway, her hair twisted in a clip, wearing her oldest joggers with colorful Winnie-the-Pooh slippers on her feet and her wand clutched at the ready in her hand. Before her towered her potions professor. His face, usually pale, was reddened from the bite of the icy wind outside, which also accounted for the disarray of his longish black hair. He wore a heavy black traveling cloak over his usual school robes, and his black boots were crusted with snow, which was melting and puddling on the hallway tile. Much more striking, however, was his physical attitude. As if in answer to his vexation, power radiated from his figure in waves, the flashing of his dark eyes and pronounced sneer accentuating the unwisdom of annoying him. "No," Hermione responded, her own irritation making her rather reckless. "I don't think it's a good idea for you to be on my doorstep at all. Why were you? What are you doing here? No one invited you. Go away!" Snape's lips thinned at the disrespect of her tone. In answer, his eyes glittered dangerously. "We may not be at Hogwarts, Miss Granger, but I am still your teacher. You would do well to keep that in mind, unless, of course, you want to spend the first week after the new year in detention with me." Now Hermione's mouth dropped open. You can't do that! I'm in my own home. I'll say what I please." Snape reached into his cloak and drew out an envelope, which he then held to her. "As you will," he replied indifferently. "You may refer to me as Sir or Professor, and do it in a tone of respect, or you may spend your evenings in January sorting pickled newts without gloves." Hermione clamped her mouth shut and glowered at him stormily. His lips stretched in a thin, triumphant smile, and he looked down at the envelope in his hand. "Professor Dumbledore has sent a letter to explain my presence," he stated. Hermione wordlessly snatched the envelope from his hand and ripped it open, reading the headmaster's words with furious indignation. "My dear Miss Granger, please accept the protection of Professor Snape. During the absence of your parents, your sudden change in plans did not allow us to make more elaborate arrangements for your safety whilst away from school. Professor Snape has graciously agreed to sacrifice his holiday to ensure that no harm will come to you. I sincerely hope that you can find it in your heart to receive him into your home and to make him feel welcome during this season of goodwill towards men. Wishing you a happy Christmas, Albus Dumbledore." Hermione crushed the parchment in her hand, staring at a spot on the floor, her cheeks flushed red with mortification. Dumbledore had been aware of her change of plans? Did that mean he was also aware of the reason for the change? Did Snape know? Was the hateful potions master aware that Hermione's so-called boyfriend had taken up with another girl to her everlasting humiliation? Was she going to have to endure his taunting for the next week? Dropping the wadded parchment into the snow puddle on the floor, Hermione turned and walked away from Snape without speaking a word to him. With narrowed eyes, he watched her go. Turning to the door, he engaged the Muggle locks and warded it carefully from within. He had already placed wards on each window of the house, which had taken him over an hour in the raw wind. He had found no sign thus far of danger in this Muggle neighborhood. The job of protecting Miss Granger should be a sinecure. Hermione came back into the hallway, a steaming mug of fragrant tea in her hand. Extending the mug to Snape, she said, "You can hang your cloak on the coat tree behind you." He took the mug from her, and she withdrew her wand, murmuring, "Evanesco," to remove the melted snow from the hallway floor. She left him again, only to return a few minutes later, her arms laden with blankets and a bed pillow. "Go on, then. Take off your cloak before you catch your death of cold." Snape set the mug of tea on the hallway table, removed his cloak, and then hung it on the wooden structure from which Miss Granger's own school cloak was hanging. "Come with me," she said, and led the way into the back of the house. The room they entered was fabulously warm compared to the environment outside. It was furnished with a long sofa, facing the hearth. The sofa was flanked by matching armchairs. A rack of Muggle electronic devices was arrayed against one wall. Miss Granger's familiar was imitating a furry ginger cushion at one end of the sofa. The girl tossed her armload of bedding on the unoccupied end of the sofa and turned to face him, her own expression closed. "You can sleep here. Help yourself to what you need from the kitchen. It's through there." She nodded her head toward a darkened doorway, through which Snape could discern glowing red numbers on a large white stove. "The bathroom is the first door on the right in the back hallway. I'm going to bed." She paused only long enough to scoop up the cat as she left the room. He could hear her climbing the stairs and was treated to the sound of her conveying her feelings by slamming her bedroom door. "Good night, Miss Granger," Snape murmured with sardonic amusement, seating himself before the fire and beginning to sip the excellent tea. Hermione woke to the sound of strangled shouts, her heart pounding a tattoo in her chest. Crookshanks was standing on the end of her bed, his ears pricked keenly forward. Arming herself, Hermione crept to her bedroom door and stopped to listen, but heard nothing save for the beating of her own heart. She opened her door and moved out onto the landing, listening with all her might. The sounds became audible again, and she recognized Snape's voice. It was Snape making those dreadful noises. Was he being attacked? But he wasn't forming intelligible words. It dawned on her then he was dreaming, or more likely, having a nightmare. Hermione stood for several moments on the top step, irresolute. Very soon the noises stopped and Snape was quiet again. After a time, she slowly made her way back to her bed. The next morning, Hermione woke up with a headache. She had no potion for a headache cure available to her, so she'd have to settle for whatever pain reliever her mother had in the medicine cupboard in the kitchen. Pulling on an additional oversized sweatshirt over the one she already wore, she shoved her feet into her trainers and made her way down to the kitchen. Severus Snape was in her house, and she would not care to appear again in his presence whilst wearing her Winnie the Pooh slippers, no matter how warm they were. Shuffling into the kitchen, she was somewhat surprised to see Snape sitting at the kitchen table with a mug of tea in the Daily Prophet. He wore his customary black teaching robes and a high-collared black coat and black trousers. On his feet were his black boots. Though his hair did not appear to have been washed, it had been combed, and which was more than Hermione could say for her own appearance. Without stopping, she continued past him to the cupboard, where her mother kept aspirin and bandages and sore throat lozenges. "Good morning, Miss Granger," Snape said. Hermione waited for additional comments, perhaps regarding her appearance or the lateness of the hour, but none were forthcoming. She found a bottle of pain reliever and took it down from the cabinet, popping off the top and shaking out two tablets. "What is that?" The pain behind Hermione's left eye throbbed once. "Not that it's any of your business," she said, "but it's a pain reliever. I have a headache."
Snape made a derisive sound. Don't swallow that rubbish. I have a headache cure potion. Wait here. Hermione didn't argue. In truth, a potion worked much more efficiently than Muggle tablets. She replaced the pills in the cupboard and moved over to sit down at the kitchen table, thankfully pouring herself a mug of tea from the china teapot before her. She was stirring sugar in when she noticed 4 galleons stacked in the middle of the table. Snape entered the kitchen again from the sitting room with a small glass vial in his hand. Hermione squinted at him because the wintry morning sunlight hurt her eyes. "What's this?" she asked, indicating the gold. "Drink this straight away," he said, handing her the potion. Hermione recognized the smell when she popped the cork from the vial. This was the headache cure potion they learnt to brew in 5th year, in which Madame Pomfrey doled out in huge quantities to a school full of angsty teenagers. She drank the potion and stood to rinse the vial at the sink. "I will do it. Drink your tea," Snape said, holding his hand out for the container. Hermione settled back in her seat and gratefully drank her tea. When Snape seated himself again across from her, she repeated her question, "Why is there gold on the table?" Snape inspected her for a moment. Apparently satisfied with what he saw, he went back to reading the newspaper. "There is gold on the table to pay for my food and drink while remaining as your guest." The last word was accompanied by a sneer. Hermione may have been brought up in the urban sprawl of London, but her parents had instilled good home training in their only child. The notion that a guest in their home should even offer to pay for his food was a shameful one. Professor Dumbledore bade her to make Snape welcome, and here he felt as if he had to pay his way, as if this were no better than a boarding house. Hermione's face burned, but she kept her face neutral. Hermione's face burned, but she kept her voice neutral as she said, "There's no need for that, sir." Snape did not reply, but studied her surreptitiously over the newspaper. She was pale, with a pucker between her brows, which indicated to him that the headache cure had not yet relieved her discomfort. Perhaps she was beginning her menstrual cycle, in which circumstance Dumbledore would owe him 2 bottles of cognac rather than 1. And if that were the problem, she'd need a diuretic as well as the headache cure to relieve her. The light sensitivity, however, seemed to indicate a migraine. In that case, he could only hope to make her more comfortable until the headache passed. Very little, short of narcotics, assisted in such cases, and he did not have those sorts of potions with him. To test his theory, he slid the plate of toast to her. "You should eat." She shook her head, her lips pressed close together. "Food sounds awful." A vehicle passed by the house on the street, its radio turned up so loud that the table vibrated with the booming bass line. She covered her ears in distress and applied pressure to her temples. Snape hid his alarm at the sudden loud noise. The child didn't seem to think the music was out of the ordinary, so he did not comment. He rose quietly and went to survey the area in front of the house through the window curtains. Convinced that there was no danger, he returned to the kitchen doorway and studied his student. "Miss Granger, have you had migraines before?" "Once." She looked quite nauseous. "It was just like this." "What helped you to feel better that time?" "Soft music in a darkened room. I slept off and on until it passed." The professor and his students spent an oddly companionable first day of their mutual confinement in the Grangers' home. Hermione lay upon the sofa with a warm, damp flannel over her eyes and listened to classical music from one of the electronic devices on the wall. Occasionally, people would talk or adverts would come from the machine, but most of the time it was very pleasant classical music. Snape sat in one of the armchairs, reading by the light of his wand tip, periodically reviewing the warming or dampening charms upon her eye cover and watching over her while she slept. As the head of Slytherin House, this was not the first time he'd been in charge of a sickly student, though he certainly never before looked after one in her own home. The early winter twilight had passed into full darkness before she sat up. Snape was in the kitchen preparing sandwiches. When he came into the sitting room and found the sofa empty, save for the blanket she'd used, he moved to stand outside the bathroom door just long enough to determine that she was using the facilities and then returned to his armchair, where he proceeded to eat a sandwich. Hermione emerged from the bathroom having emptied her bladder and feeling wrung out. but the pain in her head was gone. She saw Snape sitting in his chair, continuing to read by the light of his wand. He'd been remarkably kind to her, settling her comfortably on the sofa, making sure her eye cover was warm enough, answering her periodic questions regarding the time or the location of her cat with matter-of-fact patience. Snape turned slightly in his chair to look at her as she stood by the bathroom door, looking at him. "How do you feel?"
I'm better, sir, thank you." She walked back to the sofa and seated herself.
"Could you eat a sandwich, or would soup be better?" Hermione looked at the sandwich on his plate and her stomach growled.
"A sandwich, I think, but I can make my own."
Snape extended the plate, offering her the untouched half of his sandwich. She didn't want to take his food, but she was so hungry. The amused quirk of his eyebrow made her utter a faint laugh and snatched the sandwich. "I am very hungry," she admitted. "Then you're feeling better," he stated calmly, rising and going back to the kitchen. That night, the sleeping potion Snape had induced her to swallow allowed Hermione to sleep through the night undisturbed. He, however, thrashed and muttered in his sleep as he always did, this time unheard by any save the watchful Crookshanks.
"For the holidays you can't beat home, sweet home. For the holidays you can't beat home, sweet home.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again."
Chapter 3. It's beginning to look a lot like... Sunday morning dawned bright and clear. The temperature held steady, below freezing, but the sky was a perfect, unclouded blue. Hermione sang to herself in the shower as she bathed. She had thought she would be all alone on Christmas, but she was actually going to have company. In that case, they might as well celebrate. She would bring down the decorations from the attic and procure a tree and the makings of Christmas dinner. And perhaps she would buy her usual Christmas gifts after all. It was not Harry's fault that Ron was an idiot. Nor was it Jenny's, and she knew that each of them had presents for her because they were so transparent when asking questions and so bad at keeping secrets. After patiently plaiting her thick, long, bushy hair into a French braid down her back, she dressed in her favorite denims, last year's Weasley sweater, which was embroidered with tiny books, and pulled on her heavy brown boots. She ran down the stairs and into the kitchen, her spirits high. "Good morning, Professor," she said, bustling about to pour a packet of flavored porridge into a bowl, add milk, and put it in the microwave. "Isn't it a glorious day?" The glower which met her from behind the newspaper might have cowed a lesser mortal. A grunt was his only response. "I feel like a new person today. Thank you for looking after me yesterday." The microwave beeped, and she removed the bowl of porridge, carrying it to the table. "What did you just do to that porridge?"
"I nuked it, sir."
"Why..." Snape moved swiftly, his nonverbal Wingardium Leviosa floating the bowl off the table and into the sink before Hermione could complete her thought.
"That was my breakfast."
"Do you have any idea what the ingestion of irradiated food will do to you?" he thundered. Nonplussed, Hermione gazed into his darkened countenance. What in the world ailed the man? Unless he took her literally. She dissolved into gales of laughter. There were many things which Severus Snape could endure with equanimity. Being ridiculed was, unfortunately, not one of them. He rose from his place at the table and stood over her, an ugly expression upon his face. Even one day previously, the potions master's threatening attitude would have subdued her. Even one day previously, the potions master's threatening attitude would have subdued her. After having him look after her with as much solicitude as she might have received from her own head of house, Hermione was not afraid. She plucked a paper tissue from the box on the counter behind her and dried her cheeks. "I'm sorry, sir," she said, as her laughter subsided. "The term nuked is slang. The microwave oven produces electromagnetic radiation, which is exactly the correct wavelength to heat the water molecules in the food, which in turn heats the food itself. It's perfectly safe, I promise you." Snape struggled with himself. It would be so satisfying to snarl at the girl. He loathed appearing uninformed, especially to a student, but there was no way he could now pretend he knew exactly how the microwave contraption worked after betraying such ignorance. "Continue, by all means," he sneered. "Eat your electromagnetically radiated food. I will be outside, surveying the perimeter." Hermione cringed slightly as the front door slammed shut. She might have handled that more diplomatically, she supposed. Why did the man have to be so prickly? She chuckled as she retrieved her bowl from the thankfully empty sink and began to eat her breakfast. The better question was, why was she surprised? Surely there was a picture of Severus Snape beside the word prickly in the World Wizarding Dictionary. The rest of the morning passed in silence, with Snape reading in the sitting room, ignoring Hermione's attempts at conversation. Finally, she decided to ignore him as well. Choosing a video from the shelf, she popped it into the player and settled down on the sofa to watch one of her favorite seasonal shows. Before long, the movie had Snape's attention. "That is the most obnoxious child I have ever seen," he muttered, watching Kevin McAllister's antics as he was left home alone by his family. Hermione's gleeful laughter as she watched the little boy outwit the burglars drew his eyes more than once, though he did not laugh himself. When the boy's mother showed up on Christmas morning, Hermione sniffled and wiped her eyes on her sleeve, but when it was over, her spirits rebounded almost immediately. "We need Christmas biscuits." She stopped long enough to turn on the machine which she referred to as the stereo, putting in a flat silver disc which began to play seasonal music. Then she went into the kitchen and began to make noise. Snape stood and attended to the fire in the hearth, adding additional logs and arranging them in the grate with the flick of his wand. He had not been in a private home at Christmas in nearly 20 years, and the last time had been at the Malfoys, where the house elves attended to one's every whim, and the atmosphere was cold and formal. Since that time, he had spent the holidays at Hogwarts, which had traditions of its own. His childhood home carried for him memories that were both good and bad. Some of the good memories were of his mother at Christmas time. She loved the season and would sing while she baked the treats that he was allowed to have only at this time of year. The child in the kitchen opened the oven, not the microwave, but the actual oven, and removed a tray of something which filled the house with the aroma of cinnamon and nutmeg. Snape relaxed in the armchair and closed his eyes as he inhaled the scent of the homemade biscuits, underlain by the smell of the burning wood on the hearth. He dismissed the ache which he presently felt beneath his sternum as the undoubted product of a hastily consumed luncheon. Even when the sensation intensified as the child commenced to sing along with the music in a soft, sweet soprano, giving in to an urge that would normally never assail him, Snape wandered into the kitchen, ostensibly to procure a glass of water, and permitted the girl to put him to work stirring batter in a bright yellow bowl with a long wooden spoon. Hermione startled awake when the hoarse shout from below stairs echoed in her room. Crookshanks was waiting at the door when she shoved her feet into her Winnie-the-Pooh slippers and crept out onto the landing, her way lit by the tip of her wand. She and the cat moved silently down the stairs and into the sitting room. Snape was quiet now, lying upon his back on the sofa, his bare arms stretched up and crossed behind his head. Hermione could clearly see the dark mark on his left forearm, which he had so bravely revealed to Cornelius Fudge after the return of the Dark Lord. The pillow she had provided for him was on the floor, as was the blanket. She could see how his thrashing had twisted the strapped vest he wore about his torso, separating it from the black trousers into which it had been tucked, revealing an expanse of his very pale stomach. Hermione forced her eyes away from the intriguing planes of her sleeping professor's abdominal muscles and replaced the blanket over his sleeping form, being careful to cover his stocking feet, which extended over the end of the cushions. She padded out of the room and up the stairs, only to return shortly thereafter with something which she placed on the seat of the armchair on top of the pillow she had retrieved from the floor. When Crookshanks curled up on the arm of the couch just above Snape's head, Hermione smiled and left him there. Snape opened his eyes the next morning to find he had been roused by the girl's familiar, whose tail was tickling his face. He pushed himself into a sitting position, glaring at the cat. "I thought you slept with her," he grumbled. Crookshanks began to purr and butted his head against the professor's arm. "Keep your fleas to yourself, or you will discover the meaning of the saying that there is more than one way to skin a cat," he promised. Crookshanks flicked his tail in answer. Snape rubbed his hands over his stubbled cheeks and groaned. He could shave with his wand, but he much preferred his razor. And what he would give for a shower! But he had brought no personal items of that nature, nor a change of clothing, vowing to himself that cleansing charms would suffice for this sojourn, as he did not actually intend to sleep during his stay. Of course, he had also not intended to eat, or to speak to the girl, and he had ended up doing all three. He found the house, in spite of its indisputable muggle nature, to be a place of comfort, and the child behaved to him as if he were a favored uncle or an older brother. It was surprisingly pleasant. He noticed that his pillow, instead of being on the sofa, was on the armchair. And what was that on top of the pillow? He summoned the pillow to him, and it brought with it a black fleece tracksuit. Obviously, the girl had brought these to him. When had she come in? Why had she been prowling about in the night? "Well, that explains you, anyway," he muttered to the cat as he stood and gathered his shirt and coat before going into the bathroom to perform his morning cleansing charms. When he emerged from the bathroom and entered the kitchen, it was to find Hermione there before him, with coffee brewing and breakfast cooking. "Good morning," she said cheerfully. "Your owl brought your paper. It's on the table. Have some eggs and toast." Snape poured some coffee and accepted the plate she offered to him. "I want to go shopping," she said, joining him at the table. "If wishes were thestrals, then beggars would ride," he said dismissively. "I'm sorry, I misspoke." Hermione sipped her milk. "I am going shopping today. Would you care to come?" Snape set his coffee mug on the table with a snap. "You are not leaving this house. It is my job to keep you safe, and I cannot do that if you go gallivanting all over creation." Hermione finished chewing her bite of toast and washed it down with a sip of milk before responding. "I have some shopping to do, Professor. You can come with me if you like, but I'm not going to be held prisoner in my own home." Though he never admitted defeat, in time it was understood that he would accompany her on her shopping expedition. Hermione levitated the dirty breakfast dishes to the sink and set them to washing, all the while examining Snape from the corner of her eye. He could look so much better if he would just wash his hair properly. How could she induce him to do so? Well, she needed no further delays this morning. At least he acknowledged that she was leaving the house to shop. The next altercation involved transportation. "I am not entering that vehicle." Snape stood in the Granger's garage, his arms crossed belligerently over his chest. Hermione looked from her mother's car to the professor and back again. "But how else are we going to get to the shops? And how are we going to bring our shopping home?" She opened the driver's side door and slid in. Come on, it's getting late. Do you imagine that you can operate this machine? He demanded. Yes, I have my license. Would you like to see it? He snorted. We can apparate and you can do your shopping in Diagon Alley like the witch you are. And if we cannot carry your shopping bags, then you have bought too much. He strode to the open car door and leaned over, grasping her arm and compelling her to exit. Come on, it's getting late, he reminded her. They disapparated from her back garden, and Hermione found that he was not a bad companion for shopping. The shops of Diagon Alley were just beginning to open when they stepped through the enchanted arch from the Leaky Cauldron, and the holly and the red ribbons adorning the shop windows, along with the snow on the ground, made it all very festive. Hermione found the gifts she wanted for Harry and Ron. Yes, she would buy a gift even for Ron, for she wanted to be his friend, if not his girlfriend. And quality Quidditch supplies, and a lovely cashmere scarf, hat, and glove set for Jenny and Gladrags. In the men's department, she saw an exquisite black turtleneck cashmere jumper. A quick glance around showed her that Snape was seated near the front of the store, immersed in the book which he had produced from his coat pocket. She paid for her selections and buried the jumper at the bottom of her shopping bag, beneath the colorful hat and scarf she would send to Jenny. You cannot apparate with a fir tree! She stomped her foot, sending the powdery snow from the previous night's fall up in a cloud. I want a Christmas tree! It's not Christmas without a tree! But he was adamant, and they returned to her home with only her shopping bags. After supper that evening, she pulled out the yellow mixing bowl. Snape wandered in from the sitting room. No moving picture tonight? Maybe later. I thought I would bake now. Again? She gave him a look of fond exasperation. Well, you keep eating the biscuits I make, don't you? If I don't bake more, then where will we be? Snape froze at her expression, his own impassive mask falling into place over his face, returning him to the forbidding potions master. Suit yourself, he said indifferently, before going out of the house to patrol the area. She noticed that though he paid no apparent attention to the movie du jour, which was White Christmas, he seemed to have recovered his mood enough to enjoy the homemade biscuits with the cocoa she served before going up to bed. Didn't you care for the movie? She asked, dipping the spice biscuit into her cocoa as she sat with him before the fire. The man actually wanted bad weather, Snape said incredulously, and Hermione was still chuckling when she went up the stairs and climbed into her bed. The muffled shouts from the sitting room scarcely startled her when she sat up in her bed at 3 a.m. Her bedroom door, which she had left ajar so that Crookshanks could visit them both during the night, allowed her to hear him more clearly. She was certain that she heard him cry, "Mother!" before his words became incoherent. Picking up her wand, she padded downstairs and into the sitting room, telling herself that she simply wanted to be sure he was all right. The first sight which met her eyes was that of Crookshanks, who was curled up on Snape's midsection and purring. The fingers of the professor's right hand were threaded through the thick orange fur. This time he had managed to retain the pillow, though the blanket had once again drifted onto the floor. As she moved to drape the blanket over his form again, she saw that he was wearing the black tracksuit she had brought for him from her father's closet. They weren't pajamas, but they had to be more comfortable than sleeping in his clothes. She saw his coat, trousers, and shirt carefully arranged on the armchair, and for a moment she reached out and touched the black wool coat before going back upstairs to her own bed.
Christmas, toys in every store, but the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door. Sure, it's Christmas.